Meg did not know when she fell asleep within the body of the music. When she wakened, Aunt Beast was asleep too, the softness of her furry, faceless head drooping. Night had gone, and a dull, gray light filled the room. But she realized now that here on this planet there was no need for color, that the grays and browns merging into each other were not what the Beast knew, and that what she herself saw was only the smallest fraction of what the planet was really like. It was she who was limited by her senses, not the blind beasts, for they must have senses of which she could not even dream. She stirred slightly, and Aunt Beast bent over her immediately. "What a lovely sleep, my darling. Do you feel all right?" "I feel wonderful," Meg said. "Aunt Beast, what is this planet called?" "Oh, dear," Aunt Beast sighed. "I find it not easy at all to put things the way your mind shapes them. You call where you came from Kamazots?" "Well, it's where we came from, but it's not our planet." "You can call us Ixchel, I guess," Aunt Beast told her. "We share the same sun as lost Kamazots, but that give thanks is all we share." "Are you fighting the black thing?" Meg asked. "Oh, yes," Aunt Beast replied. "In doing that, we can never relax. We are the called according to his purpose, and whom he calls, them he also justifies. Of course, we have help, and without help it would be much more difficult." "Who helps you?" Meg asked. "Oh, dear, it is so difficult to explain things to you, small one. And I know now that it is not just because you are a child. The other two are as hard to reach into as you are. What can I tell you that will mean anything to you? Good helps us. The stars help us. Perhaps what you would call light helps us. Love helps us. Oh, my child, I cannot explain. This is something you just have to know or not know. But we look not at the things which are what you would call seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal.
Aunt Beast, do you know Mrs. What's-It? Meg asked with a sudden flooding of hope.
Mrs. What's-It? Aunt Beast was puzzled. "Oh, child, your language is so utterly simple and limited that it has the effect of extreme complication." Her forearms, tentacles waving, were outflung in a gesture of helplessness. "Would you like me to take you to your father and your Calvin?"
"Oh, yes, please."
"Let us go, then. They're waiting for you to make plans. And we thought you would enjoy eating, what is it you call it? Oh, yes, breakfast, together. You will be too warm in that heavy fur now. I will dress you in something lighter, and then we will go." As though Meg were a baby, Aunt Beast bathed and dressed her. And this new garment, though it was made of a pale fur, was lighter than the lightest summer clothes on Earth. Aunt Beast put one tentacled arm about Meg's waist and led her through long, dim corridors in which she could see only shadows and shadows of shadows until they'd reached a large, columned chamber. Shafts of light came in from an open skylight and converged about a huge, round, stone table. Here were seated several of the great beasts, and Calvin and Mr. Murray, on a stone bench that circled the table. Because the beast was so tall, even Mr. Murray's feet did not touch the ground, and lanky Calvin's long legs dangled as though he were Charles Wallace. The hall was partially enclosed by vaulted arches leading to long, paved walks. There were no empty walls, no covering roofs, so that although the light was dull in comparison to Earth sunlight, Meg had no feeling of dark or of chill.